Rabbi said there was a Velt Darshan. His name was Avshalom Shvadron. Avshalom Shvadron was known as the Maggid. Somehow, Rav Pesach Kron was writing books about Avshalom Shvadron, and somehow Rav Pesach Kron became the Maggid. But the Maggid that he was writing about was really Rav Shalom Shvadron. Rav Shalom was the Maggid of Yerushalayim. He used to speak in Shtiblach over there, Zechor Moshe Shul. And it was an interesting thing. Rav Shalom Shvadron sometimes would speak, and his drasha wouldn't clap. There would be no connection between the first thing he was saying and the second thing he was saying. And Rav Shalom Shvadron had this following. This was his anhoga. He'd prepare a speech, but sometimes something would fall into his head that he wasn't planning on saying, and he said it anyway, because he felt like HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a special ashgacha that he would say what the Olam had to hear. So even though he prepared a drasha on one thing, but somehow it fell into his head a different thought, vice to chois, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the Olam to hear this drasha. That was Reb Shalom's hanaga. It's not for, you know, you have to be on a big madrega to do such a thing. And it's not usually my derech, but over here, being that I am totally, absolutely unprepared, and I have absolutely nothing that I want to say, we'll see what HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts in my head. I hope it's something good. I was sitting last night in my house with Rosh Hashiva. Told me a Maisa Noira. And I think that this maisa, he's told me that I should be able to tell to you. I was trying to think of what am I going to do with this maisa. Last night, it was around 1:30 in the morning, it's in my house. Maisa Noira. It's an unbelievable maisa. He was there by the maisa. Okay, so this maisa is first-hand maisa. There's a Yid, if any of you might know who it is, I'm interested in knowing because I don't know if you like. He didn't tell me who it was. There's a Yid Agvir, who's in Eretz Yisrael, and tells him, Rebbe, I want you to come to my house, Matzah Pesach. Matzah Pesach, the Pinsk Kalina Rebbe comes to my house. I want you to come to my house. We'll verbring zusammen with the Pinska Kalina Rebbe. You know, they like, you know, sometimes the Gvirim like to make a whole matziv. You know, there's a Rebbe, Rosh Hashiva, there's a few Hasidim, there's the Balabas, there's all. It's a tutzach, you know. The Rosh Hashiva goes, he's there by this, he's by this Gvir's house. It's Matzah Pesach. They're sitting there, and the Rebbe says, Psamaisa, and the Rebbe says, you know, Adar Torah, the Rebbe says, you know, Rebbe Shavitz, like a joke. It's like, it's a whole matziv. It's very nice. Very nice. Kitzer, this Rosh Hashiva was there also. You know, it's neshtatif a little bit in the whole story. Gets himself a very nice check. And it goes weiter. Next year, Pesach. I believe it was this past Pesach. Kemat Zecher was this past Pesach. He calls the Gvir. The Gvir says, I want you to come, Nachamol, to my house. The Pinskalina Rebbe is coming again. Let's do it again. The same as Geschmack. The first time, let's do it another time. Okay, you know. The check was worth it for him to come again. He comes again. He sits there, the Pinskalina Rebbe, and again, you know, Rebbe Shemaisa, Dvar Torah, Vitz. The Rebbe says to him, Rebbe Yid, you're in a better mood this year than you were last year. So the Rashiva told me, he said, I didn't see any difference in his mood, anything. I don't know what he was talking about. The Rebbe says, you're in a better mood this year. So the Baal Bas says, you noticed? I'll tell you why. He said, last year, Pesach, I had a dream. I had a good friend of mine, the Baal Bas, who we were very close. And he came to me in a dream, and he was not happy. I saw on his face he was not happy. He was a very dear friend. He passed away at a young age. And I saw something on his face was bothering him. I couldn't tell what it was. He was walking down the street, he was talking on the phone, but I saw that he was something was not right. And then I woke up. I was very unsettled. by the dream. This was the night before you came to my house. And something, why is my friend coming to me in a dream? And he's not happy and something bothers him? So he said, when you came to me, he told the Rebbe, the Pinskalina Rebbe said, I'm not asking you for money for my moistus. He said there was an Isha, an Almona, who was marrying off her children. And you told me that there was a person who was makabel on himself to pay for the hoitzois of the chasana. There was a gevir who was makabel on himself to pay for the hoitzois of the chasana. And the gevir passed away before he gave the money. And the Pinskalina Rebbe took on himself to try to take over that choif. And you told me the name of the gevir, and that person is my friend that came to me the night before in the dream. My friend that came to me and said, and didn't say anything, but something was bothering him. I saw something bothered him. Didn't know what it was. That was the person that didn't manage to pay his choif. And when the gvir that was here paid up for the choif for the original person, so his friend, whose neshama and shemayim was obviously not ruyig because he made a kabbalah, he committed that he was going to help this almana get her children to the chasana. I was able to pay that choif. So the gvir said, I wasn't going to tell anyone the maisa. I wasn't going to say anything about the maisa, but once you noticed that something was wrong about my mood, so I told the maisa. This Rosh Hashiva told me last night. It's a maisa noira. That's someone's coming to someone in a dream, and the next day, the Rebbe comes to him, and he gives an opportunity that he should pay up his chayv. It's unbelievable. So the gvir said, I don't know if this is a maisa about the Pinskalina Rebbe, it's a maisa about the gvir that passed away, or it's a maisa about me. But it's a maisa, that's for sure. It's something unbelievable. But to see the chashivos of a kabbalah, someone was makabal something on himself. There was another maisa noyer that happened. There was a terrorist attack. I don't know if those that have been here for a while remember. There was a terrorist attack on Rehov Rappaport and Besht over there. There was a chesed in Irgun that does chesed for Shabbos, and they have families that come for Shabbos. Matzah Shabbos, it was a suicide bomber. A terrible, terrible story. And there was a young boy that was killed in the attack. And a few days later, he came to one of his friends in a dream, and he told his friend that I owe one of the other bachurim in yeshiva money because I borrowed money from him. I never paid it back. And my neshama is not going to be ruyik unless you pay it back for me. So his friend went to the other boy in yeshiva and said to him, did that bachur owe you money? He said, yeah, he borrowed money from me. And well, now he's not here. He said, I have to pay it back for you. I have to pay it back. So it's something to me, mavil. It's scary for me. Sometimes, you know, we borrow things from people, we ask things from people, we commit to things. You know, to be so careful with what we're saying and what we're doing, to realize that this is something that, you know, has very significant ramifications to our life. I remember one time, years and years ago, I don't remember exactly what it was. I had asked Rabbi Stark at the time, he wasn't the Mashkiach. I asked him if he could do something for me. He says, I can't give you my word. If I give my word to something, I want to make sure I can do it. So many times we do things, we say things, we make commitments. We're really careful to make sure that everything we're saying, we're doing. That's the maisa. This past week's parasha, Kadosh Baruch Hu speaks about making haftachas. Pasuk says, Va'era al Avram al Yitzchak ve'al Yaakov bekel shakai u'shmi Hashem lo nedati lahem. The pasuk says, Rashi brings, harbe avtochas hiftachti. Rashi says that a lot of things HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised. Yiftachtim v'lo kiyamti. There were promises which the Avos HaKadoshim ki'ilu didn't see the kiyam of the promise. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very careful. And sometimes it takes time. Sometimes it could take a generation or two generations or 10 generations. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu always makes sure to settle the score. I'll tell you a story. These are just things falling into my head, Rabbi Isai. It's a beautiful story about Reb Shalom Shvadron. Yeah, it's a story about Reb Shalom Shvadron. There was a Yid, a tzaddik. His name was Herman Neuberger. Rabbi Neuberger, I think his Hebrew name was Rabbi Naftali Neuberger, if I'm not mistaken. Rabbi Neuberger is the person that built the dynasty called Ner Yisrael, Ner Israel Rabbinical College. He was part of the family with the Rosh Hashiva's Rabbi Ruderman, and Rabbi Neuberger is the person that really we'll call it the brains behind the operation. Anyway, one of the great things Rabbi Neuberger did was, there was a lot of Yidden in Iran, and the Yidden in Iran didn't have anywhere to go, and Rabbi Neuberger took the bulk share of the Yidden from Iran, came to Baltimore. They were in Baltimore. My in-laws had Iranians staying in their house. My in-laws live in Baltimore. A lot of Iranians, they just came, they flooded Baltimore with Iranians. One of them is, I don't know his first name, his name is Rabbi Shub. His son, Avi, is in our yeshiva. Rabbi Shub came from Iran, and he learned in Baltimore. He was one of the first wave of boys that came to Baltimore. So, the Iranians came with tremendous Mesiras Nefesh. They left everything behind. A lot of them left their families behind just to be able to keep Torah mitzvahs, to be able to live a Yiddish lifestyle. And they were in Baltimore, and it wasn't going well. It was not going well. First of all, the Bachrim weren't so happy to have them there. You know, it was like uncomfortable, and you know, it's not the same type of, you know, lifestyle, the same type of hygiene, the same type of anything. It was just not, it wasn't going well. And there was a little bit of tension in the yeshiva, and the whole story wasn't going. If I remember correctly, Reb Shalom Shvadron came to Baltimore, and they asked Reb Shalom to address the Iranians. So they asked Reb Shalom, he should address the Iranians. The Iranians. So he said the following thing. He said, probably you're all wondering. You've been meiser nefesh to be here. You tried so hard to get here. And you're probably trying to understand, where is the tzedek? Where is the right schar that we got? Where is Hashem Kiel giving us back what we deserve? We gave up so much to come, and why is it so hard? So he said the following idea. We know that Leah is having an easy time having children, and Baruch Hashem, she's knocking out shevet after shevet. It's a big thing. And the imas knew what was going on over here. She was having, Baruch Hashem, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. And Leah's pregnant again. And she's pregnant, and she knows that if she has another child, then Rachel's only going to have one shevet. Bilhah and Zilpah are going to have two. That means that Rachel is going to have less than the shvachas. That's demoralizing. So Leah makes a decision somehow that she davens, and her child that was supposed to be a boy ends up being a girl. And the boy child ends up becoming Rachel's child. Rachel had Yosef, and Leah had Dinah. And that's tremendous Mesiras Nefesh, because we know that they were misaveh to have the Shvatim. That's what they wanted. But Leah was willing to give it up. Now, we would expect that if you're willing to give up so much for someone else, such a Maisa Chesed, that you'd get kickbacks. That it would be, you know, that everything would go well. You'd have like this great, amazing daughter, so much nachas from her. You gave up a shevet. She gave up a shevet to have this. Okay, so Dina's going to be, you know, this superstar child. That's what we'd expect. But it didn't happen. It says that Dina had a certain quality. She was a yatzonis. She went out. She was a little bit more bold than a regular girl. Perhaps Dina still had some of the more male qualities. Perhaps. Not sure. Some people suggest that. And she went out. And she got into a lot of trouble. She got into a lot of trouble, Dina. And it was very, very difficult for a Jewish girl to be violated by a subhuman, by mamish, a mushchis. For that to happen to Leah, for her to have to deal with that. And especially if it's the quality of the fact that she was somewhat, you know, she was Yotza because she had that more bold quality that she got from the fact that she was really supposed to be a Zachar. Where's the justice? Why does this all make sense? How does it add up? Says Rav Shalom Shvadron, it gets even worse. Because the Medrash says that Dina became pregnant. She had a child. And they said, we can't have this child who's from a goyish father being around. We can't. We just can't. She can't be here. So they took the child and they put a special amulet around the child's neck and they sent her away. Dina's child, just gone. Imagine the pain. Imagine how difficult that is. And a person, if they stop there, they say it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't add up. However, the story doesn't end. It doesn't end there. Yosef HaTzadik, who is the other one, the child that was supposed to be Leah's child, he himself ends up getting into a certain amount of trouble. And Yosef ends up being sold by his brothers, and after the entire story ends up in Mitzrayim, and finally ends up being restored to his position of prominence. And Yosef ends up marrying Osnas Bas Poitifera Sris Paroi. And Yosef ends up being reunited with his father and bringing his two children to his father. And his father saying, Ephraim and Manasseh, Keruven, Shimon, Yehuda. These two children are so precious. They're like Reuven and Shimon. Who was Yosef's wife? Osnas. Bas Poitifera, Sris Paroi. Says the Medrash, Sris can mean either he's like an assistant. A Sris can also mean someone that can't have children. Sris is someone that doesn't have the ability to have children. So if he's a Sris, so who's his daughter? Says the Medrash, Osnas was adopted. She was an adopted child. She was actually Dina's daughter. Yosef married Dina's daughter. And they had two children. And those two children were Ephraim and Manasseh. Says Rav Shalom Shvadron, if you stop in the middle of the story, it doesn't make any sense. Leah gave up having a shevet, and she gets no nachas. But if you wait for the story to finish, she gave up one shevet, and she got back two in return. Ephraim and Manasseh, Keruven v'Shimon Yehuda. Eventually, HaKadosh Baruch Hu settles the score. It might take time, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is reliable.
we can rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Says Rav Shalom Shvadron,
you Bachrim that have come here with Mesiras Nefesh, you Iranians that came, and you're struggling, you're having a hard time, and you're trying to figure out, why does it make any sense? You have to wait. You have to have patience. Eventually, you'll figure it out. That's the word that he said. When you get to this idea that the Kodesh Baruch Hu eventually, everything is, it's sometimes we can't see it. Sometimes it's not obvious to us. That's when a person has to have emunah and has to have patience. I heard once a mashal, I think from the Chofetz Chaim, we say in the end of Ashrei, we say, Shomer Hashem es kol oyavav, Ve'ez kol rishoyim yashmit, which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects all of his loved ones, and all of the rishoyim, all of the people that he hates, he obliterates yashmit. Said, but there's someone that he came into shul late. Came into shul late, so all he heard is, Es kol oyavav es rishoyim yashmit. The loved ones and the rishoyim, he obliterates. He says, why does Hashem obliterate his loved ones? And then there's another fellow that he was in shul on time, but he left early. So all he heard is, Shoyim Hashem es kol oyavav yeitz kol rishoyim. Hashem loves, he protects all the people he loves, and he protects all the rishoyim. Why is Hashem protecting the rishoyim? It's the pshat, says the Chofetz Chaim, you have to be there the entire time. Shoyim Hashem es kol oyavav yeitz kol rishoyim yashmid. Kodesh Baruch Hu protects these, and these are the ones that he destroys. It takes a while for everything to unfold. It takes a while. But of course, Baruch Hu, we can rely on. And it's very important for a person also to try to be reliable, to be Ne'eman. The Shevach that Akadosh Baruch Hu gives about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is called, he's an Eved Ne'eman. He's someone you can rely on. And a lot of times people make certain promises. They give certain. They say, "I'm gonna, can I borrow money from you, or I'm gonna take care of this. I'm gonna do that." A person gives his word to something. It's very important for us to try as much as we can to try to be, to live up to our commitments. I want to share with you one last thought, which I think is extremely important, which is something that perhaps is not spoken about enough in yeshivas. If someone would ask you, why is it that you're frum? What's the reason why we're frum? I think this is a very important question. Whether or not someone else is asking you, or you ask the question to yourself, why? What's the reason why we're frum? Why do we know that we're right and not some other crazy variation or idea? What's the foundation of our religion? Some people might say faith. Some people would say, well, you have faith and they have faith, so how do you know that your faith is right? Some people might say, well, there's archaeological proof to the fact that the Jewish people had a temple, there's a Beis HaMikdash. Some people might say it's because of the Bible codes, which, you know, that if a person statistically tries to look at any other book, so then some people could say that there's it doesn't make any sense. Some people could say this Jewish history is just too rich and it's improbable that the Jewish people would be here. And some people might say they have no clue why they're religious. That's just what they're doing. But the way that the Chinuch says that person's yisoid foundation, a person's yadus, has to do with this story of Sifrei Yetzias Mitzrayim and Maamar Har Sinai. It is interesting, which is not the foundation of our religion, but it's interesting thing that they have found at the bottom of the Reed Sea, they found what appears to be chariots that are that have been, you know, I don't know what the word is, crystallized, or they've, at the bottom of the sea, that they're things in the shape of chariots, which appears that you could see pictures of them, which appears that the Mitzrim drowned in the sea. But that's not the Yisoid of our Amunah. The Yisoid of our Amunah is something that a person has to think about a little bit. Is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us very clearly, I want you to realize that when it came to Har Sinai, I spoke to all of you as a people, and every single person present heard the call of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You were all there, and you all heard it. Now, we're talking about at a weak estimate 600,000 people. Weak estimate because Chazal tells us that 600,000 without the women and children. So we're talking about probably closer to 2 million, but let's say it's 600,000 for argument's sakes for the moment. 600,000 people. How could a person make up such a story that 600,000 people all spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Has there ever in history been such a big public lie? Has it ever happened? Anyone said that there's an event that happened, 600,000 people witnessed it, and the whole thing was a bluff? It's never happened? It can't happen. It's not possible. I mean, if you can make an optical illusion, you could try to do something like that. Right, where they actually saw something, but they didn't know what they understood, didn't know what they saw. But how could it be you're standing in the desert at a mountain, and all of a sudden there's lightning, thunder, there's voices, all this is documented, and the whole thing was just made up? It didn't really happen? So when was that introduced? So it was a fake. It was a fairy tale. So someone found a book and told everyone, hey, let's make a religion that we all spoke to God, you know, 100 years ago, and we're going to buy into this? And we never heard about it. My father didn't tell me about it. My grandfather never told me about it. And now I got to keep kashrus and keep kosh and keep Shabbos and keep all this stuff. You're going to make me keep all this stuff because you found a book and because you decided that our entire family, all of us, it's impossible. It's ludicrous. It doesn't make any sense. This is something which is as bona fide as being true as the fact that there was a Declaration of Independence. If you believe that there was a Declaration of Independence in America, which most of you probably never saw, but you've heard about, you probably don't even know people that say they've seen it. It's just something that you've, you know, heard. But you're 100% positive it's true. There's, without a shadow of a doubt, that there was a Maamar Har Sinai. There's no room for doubt at all. And anyone that is doubting, well, there's plenty of people that doubt the Holocaust. There's millions of people there that will say there's no Holocaust. Why? Because they're not interested in there being a Holocaust. They all talk about how great, you know, the Hitler Yimach Shemo was, and how we're going to finish the job that he didn't do because he didn't really do it. But people can doubt things if they're not interested in them being true. You can doubt anything. Doesn't mean that it's not a fact. Kabbalah Sotah is a fact. It's undisputable, undeniable. And that's the foundation of our Amunah. And it's something that while we're learning, going through these parashios, it's important for us to try to, in our mind, get that clarity. Because that's the Yisoid of our Amunah. Thank you all for listening.